Welcome to the first episode of Les Be Honest, sass, commentary, and shit you just need to hear. I'm your host, Lindsay, and the premise of this show is exactly what the name suggests. I will be discussing news, politics, ridiculousness, and anything else I find amusing and worthy of repeating in front of a microphone. I label this as an explicit podcast because it's bound to be one sometimes. So if you are under the age of 18, please see your way out now. For my listeners, if you have questions, comments, suggestions for topics, please feel free to send me an email at lesbehonestpodcast@gmail.com. There will also be a Facebook for Les Be Honest Podcast, so if you would rather message me on there, that's fine. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the podcast. Okay, so we're going to start this podcast off, and I was lucky enough to get this fine lady to do some recordings with me, so that's really exciting. She has books published. What? This is really exciting. What are the names of these books? What do we...
Well, I've got an anthology When We Become Weavers. It's an anthology about queer female poets on the Midwestern experience. It's published out of Minnesota by Squares and Rebels, and you can get it on Amazon, or probably in Minnesota. So I've got quite a collection in there. And then I've got my own book. It's called House of Bricks Made of Straw. You can get that on Amazon or on Kindle, if you do Kindle. Or for me in the fall. So I had a book release, but I sold out. So I'll be getting a new shipment in a couple of months.
Excellent. So let me give you some background. The first time I actually met this lady, I didn't even meet you. I saw you perform at some slam poetry thing. I went with one of my buddies. And I was like, holy shit, the lady's fucking awesome. And then I ended up having a New Year's Eve. That was when I officially met you. Mm-hmm. Is I went to these ladies' house for New Year's Eve, and I showed up with a case of beer and tequila.
That I hid?
That she
creatively.
Hid.
Creatively.
Beth Loof, ladies and gentlemen. Is that how I say your name right?
Yeah, that's how I say my name right.
All right. So she has agreed to read some of these awesome poems for us today. So I'm going to let her do that.
This is Progressive Reactionaries. It was just a response to a couple of bosses that I had that told me that I was working to my potential. Attention, it's official. It's been put to the test. No more need for affirmative action. Negative reactionaries to progress can give it a rest. Ben and Jerry stayed married in California. A black man became president twice. Sally, Maria, and Betty's votes have spoken. They've been voting since 1920, don't you know? And the big boy said, the glass ceiling has been broken. The sky's the limit, girl. We've noted your shiny, curly-haired character, written your references, patted your assets. So go get him, princess. Show him what a classy girl like you can do in this modern, liberated world. And so, because I'm a good girl, I'll do exactly what they tell me to. With feminist screw yous unfurled from my cape, I'll drape myself with the strength of my four sisters' namesakes. I'll prove the big boys are liars. To those Dicks, Toms, Harrys, I'm just an ungrateful hag. And they're right. I forgot to say thank you. Soaring free from their unwanted self-imposed dichotomy, I'll soar up on my broomstick, whittled with my own struggles. I'll take the room I'm entitled to. I'll fly higher than their sturdy glass caps and tend me to breaking my skin as I break boundaries, bleeding life into new frontiers where gender doesn't matter, race doesn't matter, where thought does matter. I'll sprinkle new energy into old ideas like equity and equality with sacrificial blood of my glass-cut elbows and a strong, firm kiss my ass, boys. I'll write my own references with bald-headed hands around echoes of Dickinson and Cather, two straight-haired brunette kick-ass bitches who cackled when they laughed, so their boys called them witches, too. And we'll stir up a witch's brew from hard-found ingredients, tale of integrity, eye of justice, the bones of humor and a pinch of self-acceptance. We'll gather around, cackling sisters, sounding off, breathing out incantations of Sojourner's truth, and breathing in youthful expectations of Eleanor Bloomer and Toklas, and will save all the drops that spill for a sunny day, because lately here it seems to be sprinkling, overcast with cast-off ignorance from our father's way of thinking. We'll capture the spills in glass bottles blown from broken ceilings and leave the big boys reeling from the rest of the potion, heads dizzy from all the progress and commotion that making change can make. Because that's what it'll take. The prequel of the 19th Amendment, Brown versus Board of Ed, Lawrence v. Texas, and all the other victories that strive to break the ceiling ain't enough. We'll need stories written on the pages of reality, books bound in love with a magical pen. I'll rewrite our histories and then write them again. I'll take all the endings and make them happy. Volumes of sappy stories of people just being people, no matter their shells. Tales about everything being equal. And then I'll do it again and write a sequel.
Yayer. So, what exactly, like, what made you write this? Like, was there any particular kind of inspiration that...
Yeah, actually, it's kind of the reason that I got into SLAM in the first place. I acquired adult onset epilepsy in October of 2004. And prior to that, I was on the fast track, super fast track at work. I moved here from Wichita. To help out my sister, and got hired at this place called TAG, which became something else and became something else. It is now Dell. And I had no idea what they did, and went to the interview saying, I was at this job fair downtown, and I said, I don't know what you do, but whatever it is, I'll do it well. And I got hired because I was a smartass, and truly, and I don't know why they'd think so, but... So yeah, I got hired, and I did whatever they told me to do really well. And then when I was to meet the president of the company, who came for a visit because I was being, you know, upped in the ranks pretty quickly, I had my first seizure, and I met the president of the company on a gurney going down the freight elevator to the hospital. And then I came, I say a lot, and then I came back after... taking off leave. I had to take 56 days off to get my seizures under control because I was having several a week at that time. And they stopped promoting me. I was just dead-ended because I knew it was because I was a risk, although they couldn't say it out loud. It was not legal to say it out loud, you know, because right. They can't stop you because of your medical risks, but yeah, whatever. So although I was given quite a lot to do and bonuses and raises, I was never given a higher title. Mm. And so the boss that I had at the time said, you know, you've broken the glass ceiling, you're doing a very good job, you're a great asset to us, and you're doing such a good job, girl. And he patted my shoulder, and I was really bitter and angry. And it's like, you know, I was angry at my own body and all that sort of thing. I was pissed. So I wrote this poem, but a few weeks later, I went to this craft fair at the Quest Center in Omaha. Yeah, and there was like 3,000 or 4,000 people there. I had a seizure there. It was too hot, too smelly, you know, like mm-hmm. stinky candles and stuff. And people walked over me. Nobody helped. I was right there in the middle of it. A guard walked around me. Nobody would help. And it scared the crap out of me. Became frightened of crowds. Couldn't go into a room with more than 10 people. So some friends of mine who knew I wrote challenged me to enter a slam. And they told me that I couldn't, that I was too much of a pussy and I wouldn't do it. And, you know, well, you know, you should do this, but we know you won't. Dominique Gray and Felix and Johnny Tornado and people that aren't here anymore. So I said pretty much, screw you, you know. And so I did. And I sucked because I was scared. But the second one that I did, I won second place. And then I kept getting up there. And then the next year I was... Lincoln City Slam Champ or whatever, and this is like in 2005. Then we went to Nationals in 2005. Sucked ass. Denver compared us to clubbing baby seals.
Oh god.
Yeah. And then in 2008 we were ranked 12th in the nation.
Wow.
So, and then everybody got busy and left and all that sort of thing. So I think I'm the only old person slam poet left in Lincoln. Trist just moved to Omaha, so of all the old people slam poets, I'm the only one left.
Wow.
But yeah, that's the one that started it all.
So this is your first
slam poem that I wrote.
Slam poem.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well.
Yeah, because I became an epileptic and got pissed off about
it. Yeah, the proper fuck you motivation.
That would be it. Yeah.
All right. Well, are you going to take us on our next journey?
Sure. This is how I came out of the closet. It was accidental. It wasn't on purpose. I would have come out eventually because unless you're blind, you really can't. I mean, you can't really miss it. But especially now. But even back then, you would have had to be blind, deaf, and dumb,
right.
I suppose. But
I can relate.
Back when I was just coming up, we had a friend. My community had a friend. His name was Jay, and there was a house party back then, and a bunch of men crashed it with guns and their bodies. They came in, crashed it, and shot him in the back and killed him. There was a candlelight vigil. I mean, there was no hate crime back then, so they just got caught, went to jail. I'm not even sure if they got death row. But it wasn't taken very seriously by anybody, but there was a candlelight vigil, and it was huge. And I was wearing a black T-shirt, pink triangle, silence equals death. I'm not even sure if that's a big phrase anymore, but, you know, being so old. But so I was in there, and I felt pretty secure because I was just wrapped around, you know, 20 or 30 of my friends. I was a young kid. They were protecting me. I wanted to be there, but they knew I was still in high school, for Christ's sakes, and so I didn't have any fear of being, you know, outed or seen or anything like that. Yeah, whatever. So this is political rants. I came out on the evening news. It wasn't something I would necessarily choose to do. It was accidental. After all, I was hidden in a sea of faces, but the cameras had no other places to focus their rest than on my chest. My silence equals death T-shirt silently screamed to the 10-11 viewing area, "I'm here, I'm queer." No need for announcement cards that year. It was 1988, and my fate was sealed on that evening newsreel because someone decided a few days prior whoever said all of us had equal rights to liberty and life was a liar. They decided because my friend was queer, he had no right to be here, so they killed him. And like all good martyrs, his death was not in vain. The pain of losing him put us into action. There were benefit shows every week for our brothers and sisters with AIDS. Queer Nation coming to town teaching us how to act up. Businesses uncomfortable with our affection who would zip us out got zapped as we gathered about, sat in, kissed in. We shouted, "Try us," to the military, marching just as proudly as they did in our own uniforms born of homo anarchy. Pissed off they wouldn't let us protect our own rights to protest. Afraid we'd molest them in the shower, what power they gave us, even in taking it away. My coming out didn't start all this. It started long ago with someone else's upraised fist, but I helped. I did my time. I paid the price with dead animals and death threats and fire so that my younger brothers and sisters could have a higher quality of queer life, so the closet door could crack open in places where it was shut tight. I helped. A lot of us did. And if you didn't, that's okay. Because in this state, it can seal your fate. In this state, you can lose your job, the place where you live. They can even take your kids if you piss off the wrong judge on the wrong day. But no matter what the judges have to say, we ain't going nowhere. One out of every 10 of us or so is born some kind of queer. And it's better now than it was then, and it was better then than it was before, but that ain't good enough. We need more. It's wonderful that two gay boys can walk downtown hand in hand in the street, and the only emotion I feel is the thrill they didn't get beat. But wouldn't it be better if they were walking toward a preacher who was there to meet them, to wed them? There is just that kind of order just over the border, and someone fed them the ideal they had that right, and they do. But not everyone they meet is going to agree, and see, that's why those of us who can choose to risk what we have to lose must. We can't let this thrust for fight for freedom die. It's not just the activists on the seaboard states to decide our fates. We must contribute too, and those contributions can be anything you do. I wear my colors on my back and my skin so that if you didn't know in the beginning, you'd know in the end that I was a lesbian. But those of you who aren't as loud can still be out, still be proud, just be normal. Your sexuality doesn't have to be so formally announced. Just put up your lover's photo. Make him know that your partner is not about business. And if it's still too scary a thing for you to do, if you're still too wary to risk it, that's still okay too. I'll risk it for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was trying to come up with maybe questions to ask you, and the one thing that really stuck out was obviously the fact that there is an age difference, and the fact that, like, you have experienced things that somebody my age definitely hasn't. I mean, my life, discrimination, I'm just like, I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, like, I'm out to my boss, you know, they can fire me, but they totally won't, you know, like, that doesn't even, I don't know, like, how have things changed, I mean, in the last 20-odd years?
Well, you know, I talk about dead animals and death threats and fire, that I know this is going to be heard, you know, everywhere. Hi, Istanbul. There's a house on the corner of 17th and A Street, the big, tall, white house with the swirly spiral case. Well, that swirly fire escape is because some of the stairs got broken when women from the party that I was having were escaping from the fire that somebody had set on the door when somebody set our house on fire. I was the coordinator of Coordination Nebraska back then, and somebody had put a dead cat in a gallon jug on my doorstep. I got death threats. We were incredibly political in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, you wouldn't believe that Nebraska was so political for gay rights, civil rights. We picketed, I can't remember his name, but there was a bishop that came here, and we picketed him, Indian Hills Church. There was a woman here that had counseling sessions with her private confidential counselor, and they shunned her for it. He told the congregation and they shunned her. There was a lawsuit and she won. But we picketed all over the place. We, you know, were on campus picketing ROTC because of their policies, and we were incredibly political here. But, and you know, I saw a Queer Nation bumper sticker the other day in a car. Mm-hmm. Must have been, I mean, it was barely readable, and I just cried. there was a Back to the Bible, I think it was Back to the Bible, radio station had a marquee downtown close to the Haymarket. We would get up there and change the letters to say stuff, and we would spray paint billboards and all sorts of stuff back then. You ask somebody who Sappho is and they give you a blank look. Like, hey, who, what? But it was just, I'm not saying it's a different time then, but it's, a, you know, it, I mean, you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely welcome.
But it got to be so bad. I mean, I moved into a security building, and I got voodoo dolls outside the security door, and then somebody spray painted my car with another death threat. I had a going away party because I was moving to Omaha because I got so scared. I didn't even go to it because I was afraid, and I just ran screaming to the depths of my closet in Omaha when I moved there because I was frightened for my life. There was a religious group of another ethnicity that would mail me death threats. And the police didn't help much because they didn't help much.
Yeah.
They didn't help much. And there, the investigation for the arson, kind of fizzled, you know. It wasn't that. I mean, they had the products were bought at the Russ's across the street, and they had some tape, but it kind of fizzled. I mean, they weren't really interested in. I'm assuming no one was interested in helping a bunch of people that caused a bunch of problems, and we did. We caused a bunch of problems. We caused vandalism in the name of equality, you know.
Right, right.
But then, when the head of the group went away, everything else went away, and it kind of. I'm not saying that I was responsible for everything, because I wasn't. There was a lot of members that did a lot of good, and it was a big team, but then it just kind of died.
Huh.
You know, but we were incredibly political, always on the news and causing problems and causing a stir and getting attention and making the cause known. then. I don't know.
You think that's why old Lincoln is maybe to this day, like, more liberal than Omaha? Is because we had a whole bunch of shit starting?
Yeah, I do. And it's not just queer stuff. I mean, but right. it's liberal arts and liberal this and liberal that. And there was a whole cluster of people. But it's also really fragmented, though, too. And my only wish is that all those fragments would form to make this really pretty stained glass window, right. You know? I mean, they could still be different, but you could look at it and be one big piece. But yeah, I think so. Because there were... Do you remember what a potluck is?
Yeah, we still have potlucks. We still do that on occasion. They're fun. Yeah.
But we used to bring our own plates and glasses and silverware and all that and wash them and stuff, you know, and mm-hmm. then plan things and then carry out those plans. But there were gays and straights and men and women and combinations thereof, and we would all like do stuff and then form coalitions and then carry them out. And
awesome.
You're sitting with me like a look, open up. But yeah, I mean, but and I don't see that. Maybe I'm just out of the loop, but it just seems like there's fragments now of all that stuff. But we all worked. I don't know. But then we had consensus, and I don't really like consensus much anymore.
Yeah,
I like you know
issues.
Let's make a decision now. You know.
Yeah.
Someone to be in charge. But yeah, I think that's why there's so many liberal programs and programs of help. You know,
yeah.
Because the people that are my age were your age back then. I don't know. Or maybe I'm just full of crap. I don't know.
But. I don't know. Like, this is a pretty friendly town. Like, regardless of who you are. I mean, I'm sure there's...
It is a great place if you are poor. It is a great place if you're artistic. It is a great place if you're diverse. I would much rather live here than any other place. And I have specifically stuck to this neighborhood. I don't care. I mean, even if it is crime ridden, the criminals on this part of town in my neighborhood are much more polite than the criminals anywhere else.
Yeah, I will agree with that. I too live in this neighborhood, and I like it as well.
I mean, yeah, give me your wallet, please.
May you know? I please have your wallet?
Absolutely. If you go over to the north side, it's like, give me your damn wallet, you know?
Yeah. Thank you for being polite, sir. Here's my wallet.
Absolutely.
Can you please drop it off with my license in there? That's a pain in the ass to get replaced.
I have no credit anyway. What do you get to keep it?
Just an FYI. Don't steal my identity. It's worse than yours.
It's worth nothing.
So. It's worth a day. Sorry, buddy. Good. I'm glad that I got to ask you about that, because I wonder about that sometimes. Because, I mean, it is, you can tell that this is a friendly place, and obviously, if you know any history at all, you know that it probably hasn't always been that way.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't. But at this, on the same token, though, it's now 25, 30 years later, oh my God, I sound so old. The young kids now are so much more accepting on the flip side now than they were then because there were a lot of separatists back then. Yeah. I remember meeting a woman who was pregnant and chose not to get, well, it was kind of harder to get a sex determination test back then.
Right.
You know, amnios really weren't there and those ultrasounds and stuff. And she had a boy and she was asked to leave a group because she had a son. And that was, and Michigan Women's Music Festival, transgendered, transsexual, you know, women, hell no, not even, really, they'd beat you. And they had a separate camp for the boy children, and it was very adamant that they could not come on grounds, even. So separatist lesbians was common,
huh.
Were common.
Well, it's not trendy to hate anymore.
Yeah, no,
like,
yeah.
Like, it's just not...
Yeah, I mean, so they at the same, you know, at the same time, people were working together and being more inclusive of, like, you know, idealism and, you know, getting things done. They were still, you know, I'm a lesbian, I'm a dyke, and you cannot come in if you're this, and, you know, they're really, it was really female centered, and
right.
Sometimes boys even were considered dangerous to that ideal, and nowadays. You know, transgender, okay, you're transgender and you have toes, you know. Yeah, it's yeah. like, all right.
I'm sorry, special star. Nobody really gives a shit. Yeah. You're welcome. Come on in. You want some coffee?
You've got a what on your belly? All right. that's no Dr. Seuss stories apply here. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, times change, and I think inclusiveness of every individual is the norm here.
That's good. Yeah. That's good to hear. It's good to hear, I don't know, from some other time, I guess, where, like, because you do take it for granted when you're like, well...
Yeah, I just wish the politicians could have their hands bound in duct tape and be forced to...
I know, they have been cocksuckers lately. Yeah, but not in the nice way.
Yeah, I mean,
not
one of nice my way. Poems is pre-political change, but now, I mean, it was very quiet and slipped under the news and no attention was given to it, but gay and lesbians can be foster parents in Nebraska now.
Awesome.
And that was forever not allowed. So that is a small change, but small changes are huge sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't you think that a lot of the stuff that's going on now is, like, backlash? It's just like there has been huge amounts of change, even within the last 10 years. Like, even I know that within 10 years, like, attitudes have changed quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So then you have these pissed off politicians that are playing on people's religious ideals or whatever, but, like, they're ridiculous.
Well,
like,
you believe your mother, don't you?
Well, absolutely.
Well, you believe everything your mother told you, so all these politicians believe their mothers. You know, and as they believe their mothers and they get older and they die, then younger ones who believe their mothers will change a little bit and it will go so on and so forth.
Right.
So you can't blame them for believing their mothers. And as they die off.
They've gotten, like, louder, though. Like, the ridiculous. Like, straight up ridiculous.
Because they're scared and...
Yeah.
And their lives are being threatened and, you know, all that. But as the younger ones come up, I mean, even the younger conservative ones are being less conservative.
Well, yeah, their party kind of sounds like it's dying.
And the new pope, really?
That was nice. Oh. What a wonderful thing to read. I was like, I think I just had a pleasant feeling about the pope.
I just might genuflect, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh my goodness. Way to be pope. There's a lot of young men right now that are looking at you going, mm-hmm. That's a nice gentleman. I'd like to meet that man someday. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's like if you are kind of one of those hating fuckers, like, now, you get kind of tied to, like, the Westboro type of
good old Fred, yeah.
And nobody wants to be associated with the guys. Like, nobody wants to be on that guy's team. They're just like, we don't want to sound like that. Okay, well, maybe we just won't.
I got faxed by Fred once.
Really?
Yeah, I used to run a bookstore in Wichita called Outbound Books, and in Wichita, Topeka, Lawrence, there was a T-shirt saying I got faxed by Fred, and it would be re-screen printed every once in a while because there was a list of all the businesses that he would fax, because we used fax machines back then, right?
Yeah.
And he would bombard your fax machine so that you couldn't do business on it, and that was one of his tactics to bother.
Oh.
But it was a badge of honor to get faxed by Fred Phelps.
It seems to me it's like, whoa, you're so kick-ass that guy gives a shit.
Yeah. He had prostate cancer for a while, but he got cured, so...
Somebody didn't want him.
Glad he had good health.
Nobody wants him. I mean, if there is an afterlife, don't you think that they're like, no, I'm not keeping there
for
a while.
Well. Yeah, well. Anyway.
Okay.
Everybody's got somebody, right?
That's right. Okay, what do we got? What do we got for our next poem?
I have a goddaughter, and you know, if I could complete a sentence, if many kids got molested and they got taken to the police or some center or whatever, and they said, "Where did you get molested? Where did he or she touch you?" And they said, "Down there." Could you point to your down there? Where is your down there? You know, really? Where is your down there? So my goddaughter is 19 months old. And every time, because it's normal at that age, you know, to explore your body and stuff. You know, and every time she touches her down there, I say, yep, that's your vagina. Every girl's got one. And I say that every time. And last weekend, she said, "Gina."
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I am a big proponent of saying your body parts correctly. And I wrote this far before she was even born, but it gets the point across. A vagina. Can you say that word? I'm curious, because I heard that some folks feel saying vagina is a sin. And I'm going to chime in because I don't get that. I don't think it's right, because you can turn on TV on any given night and see some rapper up on stage grabbing his junk, or the good old boys getting over the funk of their erectile dysfunction. And yeah, you can watch commercials about cervical cancer, too, but even those make me vex because they fail to mention you can get that disease from sex. And at 10 o'clock, if a man gets raped by another man, reported on the evening news, that's awful. But they put it out for all to view, the details of the broomstick up his anus. And if a woman gets raped, she loses her vagina. She just goes on trial, the viewing area in denial that she didn't deserve it. She didn't. But I will tell you what she does deserve, living in a state, being free from violence, and shoving all this cryptic, mysterious vagina stuff out of the silence, because she should, we should, be able to freely talk about vaginas. Maybe not a lot at first. Maybe just a little bit. I get that some of you are uncomfortable and just not down with it, but why? We can describe an old man's fate, his testicles, his prostate, or make the audience think our humor is thick with jokes about Peter and jokes about Dick. So, what is it about clit that makes you flit? And why do we hunt for cover when cunt is uttered? Clit, cunt, coochie, mama, why do those phrases make you red? Why do we dread to euphemize, to customize, to say, to own the vocabulary that contains our parts? We are not a weaker sex of lesser hearts. What I have got is not a hungry honeypot. That may be what you have, but not me. See, we need to slit this problem open, snatch the opportunity, if you will, and have our fill of powerful thoughts, of powerful language, powerful discourse, powerful words, because the matter is powerful. So whether you are with company or all alone, sequestered in the safety of your own home, say it. Say the words. Clit, cunt, coochie, punani, but most importantly, vagina. Vagina, vagina, come climb my vaginal walls, get lost in my ruby fruit jungle, wrap your mouth around those words, and I will teach you what it is about my clit that makes me flit, and that is saying powerful words. Vagina.
I actually have something to add to that. My computer does not know vaginas in plural form. It always gives it the little under, like, scratchy lines underneath it that tells me that I spelled it wrong, and I'm like, well, what the fuck? Like, what? And I mean, this is a relatively new computer, and vagina, so, like, we're allowed to have one, but you can't have a bunch of them. And I'm like, is this some kind of fucked up,
I've had a bunch of them.
I know, like, every time I'm like, fuck you, computer. That is a word. Put it in your dictionary. There can be more than one vagina. I don't know, for a while I thought maybe I was spelling it wrong.
Vagina. I've had my taste of vagina. I'm sorry, I stole that. I don't know. I think that's Allah. I don't know. I stole it from somebody, I think. I don't know. It is still hers, though. It was freely given. I'm digressing.
What are we going to start next?
I've got, like, two kind of somber ones, and then I'll end on a fresh, new, kind of uplifting one.
Excellent.
It's more uplifting than my bra. So shit, like, when I was... I just said shit. Is that okay?
I've been saying fuck through the whole podcast. Okay. That's fine.
All right.
I like explicit things. All right.
Cool. Goddamn mother! I'm just kidding.
Absolutely.
I usually don't curse on, like, Facebook and stuff because like lots of teenagers like me and I don't want to offend their parents.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I say an awful lot, though. I don't curse. I should curse more and say less.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I will work on that.
Work on that. I will. I want to say words.
I will. Words. So. Everybody thinks that a poet is, like, truthful and honest and writes from the heart. And most of my stuff is. Some of my stuff is totally made the hell up.
All right.
You know? So this happened and is truthful and honest. But I just said that because some of my stuff is made the hell up. But this is true. You asked what things were like, you know, when I was younger, and this happened when I was younger. There was a, I had a teacher who is a comedian and public circuit speaker who does very well for herself, and I won't mention her name because I don't have permission to, but she taught theater and American humor and just a whole bunch of nifty things, nothing traditional, in my very small country school, and chose to resign the same year that I graduated. I'm not sure if that has any connection or not, but she pretty much saved my life in more than one way. She was an amazing teacher, and now she is an amazing author and comedian and all that sort of thing. She is doing quite well for herself.
Awesome.
But she is the woman to whom I refer, and won't name. Stop that umming. This is called beard. 26 years ago when I was 17, I had a beard. Not the facial hair I have today dotting my chin, but a boyfriend named Eric. A way to win people into thinking I was straight. It wasn't great as ideas go separately. We were as queer as $3 bills, but together we gave our parents false thrills and dreams for at least as long as we were willing to keep up the charade. And in our small town, we were willing. On the first day. In the winter of 87, Eric came to me afraid, safe in the big city commotion, swept up in first crush emotion. He kissed a boy. That's all. And now he was sure he had AIDS. Girls had been my playthings for a couple of years, and girls didn't get sick, right? So I had no fear of getting that men's disease until then. On the second day, we walked around school like ticking time bombs waiting to explode, holding each other's hands tight as if they were detonators that might trip the explosion if we let go. Our classmates thought we were cute, two weird kids falling deeper in love. They had no idea we were trying to keep our heads above water. On the third day, I told my parents late at night, fighting with whether I should or just die a noble death, I decided to tell them. I knocked on their door and asked if I could bother for just a little bit, share my fears. They didn't know what AIDS was any more than I did, just that faggots got it and somehow I must be a faggot too. I wasn't ashamed, but I didn't plan to tell them that way. I just needed help. My stepmother stared. My father told me to leave, saying if he ever saw that boy again, he would shoot him. With two bags filled with everything I could pack, not sure if it was safe to come back, I left. I snuck into Eric's bedroom window to ride out the night. On the fourth day, him out the front door and me out the back, trying to look inconspicuous was like trying to hide a fart in church. All we got was the lurch of heads and rubbernecking from all the rednecks. The gossip got to school before we did. The principal and the school counselor stared us down with frowns etched in their foreheads, awkwardness dripping from their breath, shoving pamphlets in front of us on the risks of premarital sex and unwanted pregnancy. The silence in the room was more pregnant than we ever could be. On the fifth day, I was 2 months along and considering abortion. None of the good girls would talk to me anymore, and the bad girls offered me cigarettes. Eric got attaboys from the same jocks who punched him in the face last week for looking too long in the locker room. And we still held hands in the hallways tight, hoping somehow the pulses in our palms would travel up our arms and keep our heartbeats from becoming landmines. On the sixth day, by way of the bad girl network, we were summoned to her room during study hall. Coming in without knocking, she flicked the Pall Mall out the window and blew the smoke out with the room fan, grinning as if she had just been caught. She had. Motioning us to come to the door and sit on the floor, she joined us, cross-legged, cocked her head, and said, "There is no way you two are having sex with each other, so what's up?" Eric and I looked at each other's eyes, trying to stutter a panicked response when she smiled a smile which told us without telling. She couldn't say it out loud, but she knew I was the same way she was, and Eric sat quiet, a stone against the garbage can, but I spilled out all the trash that had been piling up during the last week, from his kiss to my parents and being afraid of AIDS, not knowing what it was, and by the end of that hour I had learned more than I did all year. The clocks in our bomb start ticking, and they'd stopped. Mine did. I didn't notice Eric's trapped rabbit stare. On the seventh day, Eric's body was found hanging from a tree limb in the cemetery just outside of town. He did it with a jump rope he'd stolen from the school. Beard, A layer that gives protection and comfort sometimes when it's shaved off, the exposed skin is just too thin.
Damn. I don't even know what that's messed up. So, like, you lived in a small, like a smallish town?
Yeah, I came from Fremont my first couple of years of high school, and there was like 1,000 kids in my class, just in my class alone, my grade, whatever. And then supposed to move here to Lincoln and go to Lincoln High, which I was thrilled to do because there was a speech and debate coach. Public speaking was my thing, mm-hmm. and there was a speech and debate coach who was very supportive of queer youth, and I was really looking forward to working with him. And then my parents decided to move to a small country town where there were 300 kids in the school.
Yikes.
Yeah. And I before I even went to school, I pissed off the AV guy. I didn't know who it was. And so every time I get up to speak or sing or do something, he'd turn off the microphone. yeah.
Oops.
And 3 kids had died that summer. And my sister and stepsister and I moved in. So all the kids in the town thought that in order for us to be there, somebody had to die. And so they hated us anyway. I mean, it was a screw-up town. There was a boy that had been accused of stealing some football equipment. Turns out he didn't do it, but because there was no authority or supervision over things like yearbook and stuff like that, instead of printing his name in the yearbook, they printed thief in the yearbook. I mean, it was a wonderful town to go to school in. Yeah, so... yeah, loved school. It was great.
It was a good time.
It was a good time. I'm glad I have a high IQ because I skated through it stoned the whole last year of my high school career and still got straight A's. So, yeah, don't ask me about it because I don't remember much.
All right. Well, from the sounds of it, that's probably okay. Didn't have to take too much away from that particular area.
No, mostly extracurricular. So,
all right.
It's pretty cool.
At least there's that.
Yeah. So, you know, you asked me about... how things were in my day and compared to now. And my first long-term sincere relationship happened after I went screaming into the closet and moved to Omaha. And I met an individual who identified as male but lived as a lesbian, because in 1967 as a youth, This individual is 19 years, 5 months, and 4 hours older than me. Not that I count or anything, but in 1967 was taken from family and put in a place that still exists under a different name, but put in a place and locked up and treated for homosexuality because it was a disease back then. And you could, in extreme cases, be jailed for it. I mean, this was a time that... just not shortly after the time where you had to be wearing one article of clothing, at least of the opposite. I mean, if you're wearing an article of clothing opposite sex, you could be jailed. They still had raids on gay bars. That's why you had the special lights. And it was very, very horrid. And my ex, who is still my best friend, my wife and I go to dinner, you know, all the time and stuff, and just called before you got here, actually. But was so in the closet and so frightened all through life that didn't tell me that this had happened until last summer, and was living with this burden for 40 some odd years.
Wow.
And was affected by it for a lifetime. So this is called Aiming at the Earth. And it's significant because in 1967, Russia and America signed treaties not to shoot each other, which might just be broken this year. And blacks and whites were allowed to legally marry.
Wow.
Yeah. And in 1967, this was happening to my ex. So anyway, it's called Aiming at the Earth. In 1967, the cow and the moon signed a treaty never to fire rockets upon the earth. The dish laughed with justice and joy as the fork and the spoon taught blacks and whites how to embrace their love with marriage. And they put you into a padded cell in Omaha, Nebraska, because a rich man's daughter wanted you to kiss her. This was grim. This was no fairy tale. California was Dachau for the queer, but it didn't just happen there. Cutting skin, cutting brains, cutting souls. Calling it science. Better to maim him, better to make her peas and carrots, better to kill us dead than let us be. Sweet face, fresh. At home, that's all you were, caught unwillingly in dresses you didn't want to wear, hair plaited in tresses you didn't want to share with the outside world, outside in. Just trying to be what you'd always been, so many people afraid of the young man you were meant to be, sincere, good, no threat, no travesty. But they took you from your family, stuck you in a 6x6 concrete psych ward cell 12 blocks off Dodge Street, telling you night after night, it's all right, baby. You don't need to be a man. You just need a man. Daylight didn't bring better rotten breath-wrapping health threats of horror to your mother. You'd never done the things they accused you of. Never thought the thoughts they'd framed you with, that rich man's daughter, lied. And it was unjust, and you tried to tell them. But no one listens to a poor girl who looks like a poor boy who has nothing. Stripped of your rights, your dignity, your clothing. Left only with your tears, finally you cried. Cried at the pictures when the group therapy ended. When the films were over, when the doctors left your room. Screams when the shocks left your skin. They offered you medications, offered operations to fix you. You were not broken. Not broken. Tears trickling down young boyish cheeks, shaking shoulders, thin not weak. They honestly would not break you. Not honestly. Then transgender was transitional. If you were, you better not be. They just as soon kill you as let you exist. It was dangerous to resist, a death sentence to resist much longer. So when the kind-hearted nurse pulled you into a whispering, shadowed hallway and whispered a way out, dishonest but neat, you didn't ask her to repeat it. 44 years later, choking back, broken glass cut throat regret, holding back indignation, too proud to scream its way in, you piece out a survivor's story to me like a shattered mirror falling up. The cow and the moon look down from the sky and listen, offer you their treaty and wish you peace. Transgender is not transitional. In 1967, 12 blocks off Dodge Street, you were the young man you were meant to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that things have gotten a little better for the transgendered community as well. Although, I don't know. I mean, that's still something that somebody can probably get, I don't know, their ass beat for.
Yeah, you can get your ass beat for, but could you imagine being locked up in a jail cell and being shocked? I mean, just for being who you are.
Right.
I mean, it's bad enough to consider having, I mean... So you have a dead cat in a jar on your door, really?
Right.
I mean, you can just throw it away and be grossed out, but being locked up and taken from everything you know. I mean, it still happens in other countries, but...
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, there's a lot of nasty shit that happens in other places. I don't know. It sucks. I probably need to get somebody transgendered on this show. At some point. There's a lot of questions. I mean, that's an interesting topic, of one of which I'm always like... I don't know, if you don't feel like what you are, I guess you're not. I mean, that's as much as I'm always just like, okay. Like, I don't know. It's strange that people get that offended by somebody else just being like, no, I'm not. This doesn't match inside. I'm like, that's a pretty simple way to explain something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really strange to me that people get as upset as they do about it. I'm just like, well...
Well, because it's, you know, it's scary, it's frightening. It'll be just as different as what you don't feel Baptist. What do you mean you don't feel Baptist? I'm Baptist.
No, I'm not Baptist either. I don't understand a lot of things based on the fact of, I'm just like, well, I don't really associate with any of that.
It all comes down to believing what your mother said.
I guess so. There's so many misinformed moms out there. Come on, moms.
That's the way I always explain it, you know? And then you meet somebody down the trailer park, and she's cool, and she doesn't play with you, and she plays with you, and, you know, her mama said something different, and then, you know, you share with her mama, and, you know,
maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Share your toys, and appropriately, you know, the pull truck and the shape sweater, not those toys,
because
you're too young. And,
right.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen until late.
Although I came out when I was 6, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty early, yeah. You knew what was going on.
Like, the Barbie doll bunk bed ladder had a whole new... Never mind. Anyway, so... anyway. So when you came in and called me a lady, it made me laugh because I had an argument with someone yesterday about being called lady because I've always either hated or been ambiguous or wondered or then hated that term, and fought about it last night with a friend. So all these men and dykey little butch lesbians who come, hey lady, you know, how you doing lady? It's like, really, you know, because I've always struggled with that term a lot because it's either been, you know, young lady or be a lady or don't be a lady because it's, you can't be a lady because you're a dyke or you can't be a lady because you're a whore or, you know, I'm taking your ladiness away from you because you don't deserve it or you're such a lady, but really, you know, I'm all tattooed up and I've got no hair and, you know, I could take you in an alley, you know, is that what a lady is really? I mean, I sit with my legs apart, I spit and I cuss. What's a fucking lady, you know?
I don't know, I do all those things. I consider myself a lady sometimes.
Well, yeah, so I've always been, I either get pissed or I cry when somebody calls me a lady. So, because of all this history of that goddamn four-letter word, you know?
All right.
So I have met this man in a interesting way. I mean, yeah, it doesn't matter. But anyway, so I've met this guy who's become a friend, and I asked him, well, what's a lady? And he wouldn't answer me. We got into an argument because he wouldn't answer me. I wanted him to. He said no. And so I got pissed at him, and then I wrote this last night. So... So if I stumble, get over it. But because you should never apologize for your poetry delivery.
Okay.
But it's called Lady, for lack of a better title. And it answered my own questions about it. And then after I gave it to him, he saw fit to tell him what his opinions about a lady was, which pissed me off even more. But whatever. Because I have my own answers. I didn't need his anymore. So there. Anyway, it's called Lady. When I was little, my only job was to be bare-chested and tan, playing with the other kids. I was the youngest, with stolen borrowed from older kids' motorcycle helmets buckled dangling loose under our chins and laundry baskets around our scarred elbows, fresh scab-kneed bodies sliding down the gravel piles behind grain silos. We were all the same. I was cowboy. 6-shooter cap guns strapped, dangling from narrow hips. I was Indian. War cries of injustice wailing from my lips, but we all rode the neighbor's ponies bareback. I got locked in the barn once. Then I stole the key and locked them all in. The promise of a dead cat, great bait. Then Grandma put a shirt on me, and then Grandpa sawed the climbing limbs off all the trees. Then they told me to be a girl. Bare-chested was now shameful. To be with the boys was to be careful. Prim, proper, dresses are better. Don't let your panties show. Don't let your panties show. Don't let your panties show. If you have trouble remembering, hold a dime with your knees. Remember, thank you, and please be quiet and demure, and be sure to only speak when spoken to. Be a lady. I was a traveler in a foreign land, dumping the sand from my beat-up sneakers and hiding them far under the bed so I could remember bareback when saddle shoes got too tight. With all of my might, I resisted, but they insisted, and I was 5, be a lady. City life made me a wife with no ring, a thing, whore, servant, slave, something to stave off immediacy until legitimacy came, bare-chested and tan, playing with all the others. I was the youngest. It is sad, he said. Wanton and shameful, letting your panties show, letting your panties show, letting your panties show. You will never be a lady, never be a lady. My only job was to be. When I learned that to be with boys was not to my liking, digging out my sneakers to go hiking on new familiar trails, lady became a four-letter word. My sisters taught me it was a foul word, a curse with the worst connotation, a set of expectations, conditions that bound a woman up in wire, barbing her with cuts and ifs and buts, holding her to failure if she didn't comply. And I agreed. My job was to be like them. Bare-chested and tan, proud, playing, learning from the others. I was the youngest, with my own helmet buckled tight under my chin, fresh, scabbed knees earned from new experiences. We were all the same, they said. I didn't have to wear panties. I didn't have to wear panties. I didn't have to wear panties. And none of us were ladies. Now my barbed wire is woven in canvas and painted in explosions of colors, of expectations never fulfilled, and they hang proudly on my walls. My cuts are healed. My scars are beautiful. Foul words flow from my lips only when cursing ugly, and my helmet has long since been outgrown, cracked by a hard head. I wonder often what a lady is. The word makes me gravel chin teary sometimes. Maybe it is something I would, could like to be, if I could understand it. I do not believe I look like one, bald-headed and bold. My sisters are scattered these days in opinion and place. I looked it up in the dictionary. Lady, noun. A woman who is refined, polite, and well-spoken. That is me. I am a lady. And I don't give a damn if my panties show.
Fucking love this poem, by the way. Like, I fucking love it. Because, yeah, I'm always just like, well, I mean, I know things that aren't a lady, but not being a lady to me is kind of like, if you're a giant fucking asshole, you're not a lady. Like, you know, that's it. Being a lady's like being somebody cute. Yeah. So if you're cool, you can be a lady.
And I am suddenly comfortable with it, so.
Yeah.
I saved tons of shit money on therapy.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, at least you were just like, okay, well, I'm gonna handle this. I bet. So, like, did that come out of nowhere when you were having that conversation with that guy where you just like, hey, you, what's a lady? Is it just, well, like, came in your mind, or was it after a conversation had, or?
Because I sincerely have had issues of shame about being called lady, because I actually thought that I didn't deserve it, because I mean, of lots of like years of abuse and you know, sexual abuse and rape and things like that. And I always thought a lady was someone of, you know, being refined and of dignity and of, you know, value. And when you have that kind of history, that's, I mean, years of programming that you're not worth it, you know. And 5 years of therapy, I'm getting that back. You know, it's in a little handbag. It's in luggage that matches, you know. It's in the closet.
Yeah.
but it always, I mean, that word has always hurt a little bit, because I didn't really think I deserved to wear it, you know. And I would always say, I ain't no lady, you know. I mean, I'd be cocky about it, shit. But he insisted all the time on calling me a lady, no matter how hard, I mean, only been a couple months and then, but how hard I protested, the more I protested, the louder he would say it. It's like, really? Fuck you. So,
right. So
I asked him, what is it that a lady is to you? And he said, I don't have to tell you. You just are one. It's like, really? Really? So since he wouldn't tell me, I looked it up in the dictionary. And that's what the dictionary that I used, that's what the definition was. So then I wrote the poem around it.
All right.
Which,
yeah,
took 127 minutes, according to this new feature on my computer that I discovered. I didn't know existed.
Oh, it timed you?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes it's nice to get to know yourself in other terms.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I'm really refined or not. I can be. I know how to set a table with
You're
all the forks.
You're pretty refined.
Yeah.
Just because you can, you know, tell somebody to shut the fuck up doesn't mean you're not refined.
I can insult you and have you thank me for it.
Exactly,
so.
Exactly. Like, I don't, you're not rude.
And I can creatively hide your tequila, so.
And you can creatively hide my tequila. I was just like, oh, I don't know what to do. And I looked at your wife, and she just kind of gave me the, you're on your own team. type of look, and I was like, oh shit,
people across the nation are gonna go, what the hell?
What the fuck?
Does a tequila bottle fit there?
Pants were kept on, ladies and gentlemen. Pants were kept on. But yeah, I don't know. No, so these were awesome poems.
I loved all of them. I was just like, well, I don't know how many I want you to do. Maybe three something. And then she started reading these for me. Well, pick one. And I'm like, but I like all of them. So she was kind enough to actually do all of these for me. We'll see what happens after editing. Mm.
Hey, can I give a plug a little bit?
Please do plug.
Okay. So we're in Lincoln, Nebraska. And when we're not busy, like, chasing buffalo and stuff, there's a bar called The Panic on 18th and M Street. N as in Nelly or Nancy or whatever. And in the fall and winter, there's a poetry show. It was on Wednesdays last year. But call and check that out and see if you want to come. It's for 21 and over. But we're actually going to be having a poetry slam this year. And I head both of those shows. You can Facebook me. My name is Beth, B-E-T-H. B as in Barry, E as in Edward, T as in Tom, H, and my last name is Loof, like Goof with an L and an E on the end. And my phone number is actually on there. I don't really care if you call me. If I don't like it, I won't call you back. But just send me a message or give me a phone call if you're interested in that information. If you don't know what slam poetry is, YouTube it. Don't ask me a lot of questions. Just find out for yourself. But if you're interested and you live in Lincoln or surrounding areas, then you can get involved. And that's for all ages. So,
slam poetry is pretty sweet, by the way.
It is. It's cool.
Even if you're not a fan of art and that sort of thing.
And if you suck, people will still love you. So.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can get up there and do it, it's fucking awesome. Yeah. So, like, how do people... So, if somebody's interested, they can just get a hold of you.
Yeah.
Or if they have questions, definitely feel free to use Google. Because there are some awesome examples of what slam poetry is. It's sweet. You'll love it.
Yeah, well, and YouTube is a great resource because the best slam poets right now are available on YouTube. The National Slam Poetry Contest is happening this week. So all the competitive poets will be being put on YouTube this week. So if you want to see somebody that's hot and competing... you have to have no life to be a competitive slam poet, and I have a big life, so I don't do it. But
yeah, so if you don't have a life, and say you listen to a lot of podcasts like I do, then maybe this might be for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, because you have to tour, be able to travel, and leave your family and place of residence for like 6 weeks in the summertime, and
yeah,
I can't do that.
But it would be super awesome.
Yeah, so
because it's super awesome.
Yeah, so Facebook me, give you a call, whatever, and if you want to be better in poetry, I can try to help or whatever, or send you somebody who can.
Awesome.
So, but thank you for having me, I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, thank you. This will be podcast number one.
Oh.
So you get to be the opening of this podcast.
You broke your cherry with me.
I know, it's so exciting. Oh.
Don't tell my wife.
Don't tell my wife. She might listen to this. Anita, sorry about that. Yeah, and I do have one final question, and that is, do you have any awesome advice for the living? That being anything that sticks true to, you know, you've been around for a while. You got anything good to say?
Actually, yeah. If someone has affected you or done something nice for you to the positive, to tell them. Tell them as often as possible, because, I mean, even if it's something small that has made a difference in your day, to tell them. Just tell them, because you might not ever get the chance, and people don't often hear enough that they have done positive things in your life, and it could make a huge difference in theirs.
Awesome. That is great advice. So people, if you have something nice to say or you think it, say it. Say it to people. I guarantee that most of the time they're probably going to respond really well to that, because, well, none of us get enough attaboys or attagirls or asexuals, whatever. but yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
Okay, so this is a propaganda club. Okay, so this is a propaganda club. Okay, so this is a propaganda club. Okay, so this is, I think this is an incredibly slippery slope. If you are trying to prevent an American citizen from exercising his right to free speech.
Propaganda platform.
Right.